start a new series this morning about the detox, primarily focused on people and products in your life that become toxic. Now, the thing about things that are toxic is they typically come with a warning label. And the reason why toxic things come with a warning label is because typically things that are toxic, we don't know they're toxic unless they had a warning label. That's why they tell you, don't let your kid put this in their mouth. It's toxic. Or it's so good to know that some crayons are non-toxic, so you can eat them. Whether you're a kid or a Marine or whatever else, you can always eat them. I'm sorry, am I supposed to say that? Anyways, so you need to know what is toxic and what isn't, because toxic are things that at some point will cause you either physical harm, emotional harm, or psychological harm at some point along the way. And most toxins, the cause and effect isn't immediate. I mean, if you get hit in the head with a 2x4, pretty quickly you know that was not good. The problem with toxins is that it takes them a while, oftentimes, for them to affect you. That's why back when I did a lot of construction work, there's always a warning against removing anything with asbestos in it. And because you don't feel any effect from working in a room full of asbestos, you don't think anything of it. But if you've been on job sites long enough, eventually you'll meet some old crusty guy who worked with too much asbestos back in the 70s and 80s and has real problems from it now. And once you see one person that has that issue, you'll go back and go, no, I'm not touching anything with asbestos. And that's the way it is with the toxic people and products in our life, is that we, for some of them, you have a great affinity for. We're going to get to some things that are probably a little touchy along the way in this series. But you have to realize and stop for a minute and go, but this is not healthy. This is not good. Now, before I go any further, I have to give a disclaimer on a message like this, because more than once I've gotten an email that every pastor dreads, and it's something like this. It's basically where you're using me as a justification for your own sin, where you say, thank you so much for this message this past week, Steve. I'm leaving my husband because of what you said on Sunday. Okay, I am going to teach the Bible this morning. However, before you make specific application that will cause directional, decisional harm to either you or somebody else in your life, make sure you have pastoral supervision with said application. Or find a good Christian, a keyword Christian counselor who can tell you and help you delineate, does this scripture actually apply to your situation, or are you just mad right now? Okay, just, can we get that out there? I don't want that email. So many times I'm like, I didn't even talk about marriage this past week. So which is why I'm scared to talk about relationships right now, because what I'm going to be talking about today and next week is about toxic relationships and about toxic people in your life. And so quickly, people want to just label somebody as that and use it as an excuse to move on. One of the reasons why I showed that clip from Ania there is because in there she said, I don't want to see people as disposable. I don't want to just throw people off. And I see people do this too often, especially in ministry. I'll watch pastors who'll just be really quick to label somebody in their church as, oh, they're just disgruntled like the Israelites in the wilderness, and I don't want my church to have to wander in the wilderness for the next 40 years because of someone like them. I'm just going to get rid of them out of the church. Really? Could it be just that you haven't communicated the vision of where you're trying to go? I mean, are they really that bad of a person? I mean, sometimes it's a leadership issue. Sometimes it's not them at all. Sometimes you just haven't taken the time to clearly explain where you want to go. And I'm always wary of somebody who just wants to label somebody as toxic and move on. And so be very careful before you label anybody as a result of these two messages. This is almost like as if, what happens when a freshman takes psychology class in college? They come home over Christmas break, and they are diagnosing everybody in the family. You got this ism, and you got that, and you got this, and you got that, and what you need to do is this, and you're like, really? One semester of freshman psychology, and that's where you're coming back with? You're not a shrink, okay? You got just enough information to be dangerous. And that's my worry with a message like this, is that you could easily take this and do a lot of harm and reckless application. So, make sure I got all my disclaimers out of the way. Oh, last one. The primary application for everything you hear this morning is you. You. You, okay? So, can you just say right now, I'm not perfect? Okay. Because of that, we're going to talk this morning about the wise, the fool, and next week we're going to talk about the wicked. See, because Medea's got her three categories from the tree, the leaf, the branches, and the roots. In the Proverbs, they've got the wise, the fool, and the wicked. All of us, at different times in our life, or at the same time in different areas of our life, can be all three. There are things you're really wise with, and there are things you're really foolish with, and there are some things you do that you know are wicked, and they're evil, and they're wrong, and they're the sinful part of your life, okay? So there are times where you are the toxic person in a relationship. Can I get amen on that? Yeah, right? We've all done it, because we're not perfect, right? And so, as you're listening this morning, your primary listen is for you. And you need to ask yourself the question, where am I a toxic influence in a relationship? Where are the seeds of toxicity going on in my own life that I need to address, that I need to look at? Make that application first. Jesus said something like this. He said something about a plank and a speck. I don't know if that's biblical or not, but I think he said something to the effect of, before you go to remove the toxic speck in somebody else's eye, realize you've got a 55-gallon drum in your own, okay? Something to that effect, right? It's over in Matthew. So let's first examine our own lives before we look at anybody else. Can we agree on that? Because I know you're going to be thinking about somebody as you go through this. You're going to be tempted to elbow or send this link to somebody. We're applying it to ourselves first, and then we're going to look beyond that as well. Because you do need to look at it beyond that. You need some help to do that, but we also first need to start with ourselves. So with that, let's talk about three categories of wise, foolish, and wicked. This morning, we're just going to be looking at the wise and the foolish. That's all I have time for. How do you determine which is which? How do you put somebody in that category? How do you put yourself in each of these categories? As you look through the book of Proverbs, what you see is that what delineates somebody from one category to the next is what they do when truth is presented to them. How do they react when they are presented with the truth? How do they react when they are confronted with reality? See, for a wise person, they love the truth. They understand the truth will set them free. They want to live in the truth. They want to live in the life. They want to be in line with whatever is real. They realize that fighting the truth is just going to cost them time, money, relationships, health. It's going to keep them in bondage to addictions and relationships and so much more. And so they want to live in the truth because they understand when I'm living in a dream world and I'm not in touch with reality, it creates problems for me and for other people, and it's very expensive to not live in reality, isn't it? Because you keep on, you know, paying stupid taxes and other things like that. When I say stupid taxes, I mean like the government sends you. I just mean like you pay late fees and other things like that because you're not living in reality. You think there are no consequences to your issues. And so you have to understand that the truth doesn't play favorites. Truth doesn't care about your feelings. It doesn't change because you're special. Truth is simply truth. What goes up must come down. You cannot defy gravity. You cannot defy the laws of reality. You cannot defy scriptural principles. They're just truth. And when you're in violation of truth, the wise person wants to know. The wise person is eager to receive truth. That's why we're going to start over in Proverbs chapter 9, verse 7 to 9. And it says this, whoever corrects the mocker just invites insults. Whoever rebukes the wicked will incur abuse. So do not rebuke mockers or they're going to hate you. But you rebuke the wise and they will love you for it. Instruct the wise, and you'll be wiser still. They'll be wiser still. Teach the righteous, and they will add to their learning. See, here's what happens. When you confront a wise person, and you say something like, hey, I think you have bad breath, what do they do? You blow on your, have you done that? You blow on your hand, you smell it, and you're like, oh, yeah, I think that is an issue, right? You know, what happened instantly is they want to investigate to learn more. What's the evidence? Show me what I can know. If you confront them and say, what you said in the meeting was hurtful, and I don't know if you noticed this, but it really rubbed a few people the wrong way. The wise person will go, what did I say? Who was hurt by it? How did it come across? And they'll want to know more about it, not to try to deflect blame, not to find any excuses. They just want to know what it is that they did. Has anybody ever done something offensive and have no clue you did it? Because I speak for a living, I do it all the time. Multiple times I have made comments and come back and somebody said to me, that was very insensitive. I'm like, I had no idea. I had no idea that was offensive, but I'll change and reroute as a result of it. Other times they'll be confronted with something and they'll say, I want to go learn more about that. And maybe you'll go check out a book about that, about relationships or about communicating. You say, I need to learn how to communicate better, you know, maybe perhaps with. I once worked at an office. I was the only man on a staff with 85 women. And I was the only man. I had to do two things. One, I had to do a lot of work on how to communicate better with women. And secondly, I had to find a new job. Those are both true. Because I found out after reading the first one, I'm not really good at this one over here in the long run. So just that's what I learned. But it was the truth, and it wasn't a good position for me in the long run. I was very foolish in the things that I would say stuff in a meeting and walk out of there and be like, that was very hurtful. I'm like, well, what happened? Nobody had any problem in the meeting, and then I find out later that there were hurt feelings and everything. It's not a skill set I had, and so we had lots of workshops and everything to try to fix Steve, and we found a fix. And I found a different line of work. It just wasn't a good thing. But the wise person will want to go and learn more about it and how they can change and how they can fix. They basically say when they're confronted with reality, they want to live in the light, they want to live in reality, and they realize if there's something in me that needs to change, I want to change it. I want to be different. Remember those Dos Equis commercials with the most interesting man in the world? There was one of them, and would always laugh whenever I would hear this phrase. It was just so funny. It said, if he punched you in the face, you'd fight the urge not to thank him for it. Do you know that's actually out of the Bible? That literally is out of the Bible. If you go over to David writes about this in Psalm 141. He said, let a righteous man strike me, and that's kindness. Let him rebuke me. That's like an oil on my head. I won't refuse it, for my prayer will be against the deeds of evildoers. Hear what he said? He said, listen, if somebody smacks me in the face, that might be a good thing. Any of y'all need a smack in the face sometimes? You know, what's really good about it, I actually had somebody one time who, they were making a lot of really dumb decisions. And on the phone, I remember talking with them, and he said, you know, I feel like I just need somebody to come over here and punch me in the face. I said, where are you at? And you see, here's the thing. Now, in the past, I was going to have to go do it. What is great is we actually have a professional fighter on staff now. Pastor Micah was a professional fighter. And if you need a punch in the face, we have that. And he works with youth. If you have a youth who needs a kick in the pants, every Sunday night, 6 to 8, send them up here. Now, he will not do that unless you give him express written permission to do it. My son wanted to learn how to wrestle and fight better. And so he came to Pastor Micah and said, can you teach me how to fight? And Micah looked at me. He stopped looking, he looked over me. He goes, I got to ask your dad. I was like, just don't break anything, but do whatever you need. Smack him around as much as you need to. He's like, okay. And it's funny, my son was like, all right. I'm like, hey, have at it, man. Sometimes you need that. And a wise person will recognize, sometimes I need to be snapped back to reality. Sometimes I need a good kick in the pants. Sometimes I need somebody to light a fire under me. And I need that. And I understand that when you brought that to my attention, it was something I needed. And there are sometimes maybe a wise person in the moment. You might act foolishly in the moment, but you might come back around within 24 hours or maybe 2 days or maybe a week and come back and say, hey, thank you so much for saying that. I needed that. So with the wise person, what you do is you simply confront them with the truth and show them how what they're doing is an issue. Now, the struggle with a wise person, though, is to speak the truth in love. Because what you'll find sometimes is that they're so good at taking the honest facts, sometimes you'll be brutally honest with them and be very brutal in the way you express your honesty. You can be brutally honest, but not be brutal. So the challenge with somebody who is wise is just to speak the truth in love, to find loving ways to confront them and say, hey, this is an issue. I thought you might want to be aware of this. Now, with a fool, it's a little bit different. And now here's the thing. With a fool, let me make sure we're clear on the definitions. This has nothing to do with how much you know. Sometimes some of the smartest, most knowledgeable people are the most foolish people, right? It has to do with the application of knowledge. It has to do with what you actually do. Most importantly, it has to do with how you respond to truth. When truth is responded, you know, is presented to somebody, do they receive it as truth or do they do something else with it? See, because the wise person, when confronted with reality, seeks to change to match reality. The fool, when confronted with reality, they seek to change the reality so they can continue in their foolishness. See the difference? So the way that happens is this. Number one is they'll go down to rationalizations or justifications, right? You'll say, hey, this is an issue. You hurt somebody's feelings. And they'll go, well, what I said really wasn't all that hurtful. It's just rationalization. Where they'll say, well, it's not really a lie because, it's not really stealing because, it's not really cheating because, and they'll go down some path of rationalization or justification of their actions. If not that, sometimes they'll go to minimizing. You're just making a big deal out of this. Why are you always, you know, blowing this all out of proportion? If you all remember Monty Python's Search for the Holy Grail, Classic example of this is the Black Knight, remember? Flesh wound, just a flesh wound. He, if you don't know the scene, he's gotten both of his arms, both of his legs cut off, and he's like, get back here, fight me. It's like, you don't have anything left. It's just a flesh wound. It's just a classic minimizing of what the actual issue is. Or when somebody says, I can stop at any time. Prove it. Okay, twice in my life, I've shared this before, twice in my life, once back, I don't know, shortly after college, and then again just back in 2014, I had people accuse me of being addicted to Coca-Cola because I like to drink Coca-Cola. And this is the only church in the country, I think, where I can sit down at a table, have everybody at the table order an alcoholic beverage, have their pastor order a Coke, and they all decide they're going to have an intervention at that table. That's a true story. I got up to use the restroom. I came back, and literally it was, Steve, we need to talk to you about a problem. What you've been drinking is an issue. So here's the thing. I told him it was an addiction. I went and researched addictions, found out more about addictions. Can you be addicted to Coca-Cola? Yes, you can, actually. You can have addictions and things like that. But here's the thing. So 2014, I was like, all right, fine. I won't drink a Coke anymore. I haven't had a Coke since. Okay, you don't need to clap for that. It didn't take any effort. It wasn't an addiction. I stopped cold turkey. I didn't need a group. I didn't need support. I didn't need to go to CR for it. I didn't need any coping mechanisms for it. I just drank something else. That's not an addiction. If you can't do that, you need to go to CR. You need a group, and there's no shame in that. Because that's the way addictions are. They have a hold over you. They have power over you. Everybody has an ism. Everybody is addicted to something, right? And you can't just stop an addiction on your own. So you want to tell somebody you can stop at any time? Fine, prove it. Prove it. Do it for 90 days. 90 days, 3 months. You know, from now till April, don't do it. Don't look at it. Don't drink it. Don't touch it. Don't eat it. Don't smoke it. Don't chew it. Whatever it might be, just don't do it. Don't talk to them, whatever it is. Just don't do it. See how it is. And if you have so much as one slip up, it's an issue. It's an issue. I didn't even have a temptation. I didn't have any shakes, nothing. It wasn't an issue. So if they don't go to justification or minimizing, they'll go to blame shifting. Shoot the messenger, right? Or it's really your fault. Well, if you would do more too, or the reason why I drink so much is you yell so much. I could not get a Hank Williams song out of my mind when I was going through that. It's going to take a lot of liquor to like her. I know I'm not encouraging anybody who has an alcohol problem, but just the lyrics of it were so funny because it's like, that's just justifying your own behavior by somebody else, saying it's going to take a lot of liquor to like her. Or saying, the problem is that you just don't trust me because you're paranoid all the time. Well, maybe if you didn't do so much shady stuff, you wouldn't be putting me in a position where I have to trust you, right? See, because some people would say, well, if you loved me, you'd trust me. But you can also come back and say, yeah, but if you loved me, you wouldn't force me to have to trust you. You'd be a little more open with your life. You wouldn't have anything to hide because love doesn't have any secrets. Love, what you see between Adam and Eve, they were naked and they were unafraid and they were unashamed before sin entered in. It's funny, when sin entered in, what did they do when God showed up? They hid, they blamed, they do all these things that, and coincidentally, you're doing right now. And if they don't go to minimizing, if they don't go to justification, if they don't go to blame shifting, the funniest of all of them, but the most tragic of all of them, is arrogance. Arrogance says the rules don't apply to me. Arrogance says the odds are always in my favor, right? I can beat the odds. This isn't an issue for me. See, I've got a system. I know the speed limits for everybody else, but they don't have NASCAR training like I do. Do you know how much time I've spent on the simulator online? Seriously? Everybody else needs to drive 55. I can weave. I don't have any problems, right? The poster child for this, I hate to say it, was Steve Irwin, right? I would say when he died, the entire world had two reactions. One is you were deeply saddened, right? Who didn't love, crikey, you know, who didn't love Steve Irwin, right? Beautiful. He was poisonous. Everybody just was so saddened and heartbroken when he died, right? But then you also went, it's going to happen at some point, right? Because even the most world's greatest expert on dangerous animals, at some point, the odds are going to catch up with you. At some point, it's going to fall through. And this is the guy, you know this guy, this girl, right? They're smarter than the multi-billion-dollar credit card companies. and they've figured out a system how they can pay off one credit card with another credit card with no interest, no payments for, you know, for 6 months. And then in 6 months, they'll pay that off with another credit card. Then they'll refinance the house to pay that off. And they've got it all figured out, and they've got the system. They don't need to change their spending habits because they've got it all figured out. They're smarter than the system. Yeah. And eventually, they'll realize they're not. Or how about this arrogant statement? I've had this more than once. It is so tragic. I've had this more than once. You know, Steve, I'm not saying that I ever would, but if I wanted to, I could cheat on my spouse and get away with it because I've been trained in how to do espionage. It's funny you should say that. I've been trained in the scriptures. Numbers 32:23 says, be sure your sin will find you out. We'll see who's got more training here, whose knowledge rises to the top. And I always point out Exhibit A, General Petraeus. He got busted. You don't think he had more training than you? Most of the time, within 2 months after that conversation, they get busted because the reason why they're bringing that up is because they're doing something anyway. It's sad I've had that conversation more than once where people bragged on their espionage training. If God wants your sin found out, he's going to have it found out. Sorry, you're not perfect. At some point, you're going to mess up. It's going to happen. And when God wants it to happen, it's going to happen. Do dangerous things. Don't be surprised when an accident happens. So some people, they go with, you know, the whole blame shifting. Some people go to the minimizing. Some people go to the rationalization. Some people just in arrogance think that they can beat the odds. And so when they're confronted with truth, the rules just don't apply to them because they're smarter and they're stronger and they figured something out. So what do you do with a fool? Well, this is where the Bible gets partly confusing, but partly it's comforting to know that God understands that these are complex situations. Dealing with a fool, whether it be you as a fool or dealing with somebody else as a fool, is very complex. So when you read this out of Proverbs 26, verses 4 and 5, it may seem like it's contradicting itself, but understanding what it's doing is God's understanding. This is a very complicated situation. It says, don't answer a fool according to his folly, or you yourself will become like him. You'll be just as foolish if you answer him like that. Next verse. You must answer a fool according to his folly, or he'll become wise in his own eyes. You see, God, that's why sometimes I just don't ask your opinion. Right? So we want to, is that not a foolish answer right there anyway? God just told you his word, and you're like, see, I don't need to listen to that. I know better than God does, because God just contradicts himself. No. There's some nuance here. Now, I'll start with verse 5. Answer a fool according to his folly, or he'll become wise in his own eyes. Do you know what happens when you don't confront somebody who's foolish? Eventually, they don't think there's a problem, right? They'll become wise in their own eyes. They've got it all figured out. When the boss does not confront the fool at the office who's not getting their job done and everybody else is picking up their slack, eventually, they feel like they're a great employee. They feel like they're doing everything good. They don't think there's anything wrong. But you know what happens to that workplace? All the good people leave. Because the boss won't get rid of that one person who does that, right? So if you don't go and address that thing, this person's not going to think there's any problem. So you have to address it. Now, when you do address it, if you answer a fool according to his folly, in other words, if you chase them down the rabbit hole, if you jump into fantasy land with them, you will be a fool too. You can't go down. If you follow their rationalization and try to adjust to their rationalization and live in their rationalization, you'll be a fool. Sometimes we call that codependency, right? Codependency is where you follow them into fantasy land, where there's no consequences for actions, and so you just take on their consequences for their actions and let them keep on going down that path. Maybe we should bring another person into the bedroom if that's really what will help our relationship out. Some people do it. That's foolish. You're following them into fantasy land. You are. And you're going to suffer for it too. You just don't go down that path. They said it really wasn't an addiction, and so I guess it's not. They said they could stop at any time, and they've got it under control, so we're just going to go with that. No, you're following them into fantasy land. You can't answer a fool according to their folly and go down that same path, or guess who else is a fool? You are. Yeah, there's a reason why Celebrate Recovery has a group for codependency, because it's people who have followed a fool down the fool's path. And there's no shame in that. It's done out of love. It's done out of grace. It's done out of hope. It's done out of, you know, a lot of good intentions. It just gets slightly misdirected, and you find yourself caught down in this horrible vortex that leads down to that place. And so I highly encourage you, come on out. You're not alone. You're not the only person who's gone down that path. All right, so what do you do? With a wise person, we already said, you just talk to them because talking helps. They see reality, they adjust to reality. With the fool, we already said talking doesn't help. And so the conversation you need to have is a conversation of why talking isn't helping. So instead of, you know, you just come in and say, listen, talking isn't helping the problem, so I don't want to talk about the problem anymore. I want to talk about why talking isn't helping the problem. And there may be some reasons for that. There may be some things that you can do to adjust or help in that. Sometimes it's an insecurity or an embarrassment. And the reason why there's this issue here is because the person just, you know, they're embarrassed about something. Sometimes there's a past hurt. Sometimes there's a past relational damage that makes them go in that pattern. Sometimes it's just not in their personality makeup to be able to do that. So for instance, true confession here, I am horrible keeping appointments. I get focused in the moment, and I'll give somebody my undivided attention to the point where I just block out everything else in the world. So for instance, if I'm supposed to meet you at 2:00, but Pastor Micah comes in and says, hey, I got a question about youth ministry or something we're gonna do with you. What do you think about this? I'll just be so engulfed in that conversation, I will never make my 2:00 appointment. So what I've done is I've asked Pastor April to, whenever you lack personal discipline, add external structure. It's a life principle. Whenever you lack personal discipline, add external structure. And so April comes in and she treats me like a 4-year-old that I am and says, she'll text me the night before and say, Steve, you have a 2:00 appointment tomorrow. Morning of, she'll text me and say, Steve, remember, 2:00 appointment today. At 1:30, she'll say, Steve, are you on your way to your 2:00 appointment? Now, I know that is pathetic. I get that. But I need that. Foolishness is to arrogantly say, I got it. Foolishness is to not agree that there's a problem. The most wise thing I can do is say, this is an area I lack. This is something I'm not strong in. No amount of training, correction, practice is going to change this personality style for me. So I have to have the external structure. Some of you don't have the discipline to work out. You need a personal trainer. You need a training partner, right? Because otherwise you're not going to do it. And whatever area you lack personal discipline, by the way, every addiction that is out there, you lack personal discipline, otherwise you would have changed it by now, add external structure. That's why we have CR. You can't get out of debt? Add external structure. Join a small group. Dave Ramsey group. Do that. If you have the same marriage problems over and over again, join a marriage small group. Add external structure to the areas where you struggle in. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what wise people do. They add external structure to the area there's problems. So maybe the issue why you have that same thing is no external structure. I had this with my kids once. I had a system perfectly designed to end up having backpacks always left on the couch, shoes left in front of the door, and no chores getting done after school. And you know, no amount of talking, yelling, coercing, getting upset ever changed that. You know what we had to do? I made a simple checklist, right? When you came in, backpack goes to your room, shoes go over on the shoe rack, chores get done, homework gets done. Ask an adult, you know, whether it be me or, you know, whoever was watching the kids at the time, ask an adult to approve, and then you get to play. Without that, nothing ever changed. See? So it wasn't about, you know, I could just go, oh, my kids are foolish, and all these toxic kids, you know, they just never do what they ask them to do. No. That wasn't it. It was a system problem. I had to change the system, the after-school system. You know, the system of what we did after school had to be changed, and that led to a problem. Now, if it doesn't fall into that category, and it's still a problem, then, you know, talking doesn't work. Talking about why talking doesn't work. So you have to go to the third place, and that's just simply consequences. Now, this is a carefully constructed statement. Let me make sure you get it right. I understand I cannot change you, and you're free to make your decisions. But I'm free to make my own decisions too. And from this day forward, there's your consequence. Something like, I'm not going to bear the burden of the consequence of your actions anymore. That is a codependent, healthy statement, is it not? Yes. I need to limit my exposure to this problem. From this point on, let's say it's an employee situation. From this point on, you are not going to be in a leadership position anymore in our organization. From this point on, we're demoting you from being over this area to just working in this area. Or from this point on, you're going to be micromanaged. You know, here's your supervisor, they're going to be over, you have to give a checklist of what you're doing. You know, every hour I need you to give a summary of your day. At 4:30, you stop what you're doing, go through your day, and give a summary of what you did each hour of the day on your work day. Well, that's micromanaging. Yes, because you need it. And that's the consequences of this behavior. If you want to continue employment here, that's what you have to do. As a coach, maybe you've done this. You benched your star player. Why? There was a consequence for their behavior. They act like that. They spout off at the referee. They cost you penalties. They're going to get benched. I remember one time I had a kid get a foul, and I said, come over here. I need to talk to you. And he flung me off. No problem. Out of the game. Best player, right? There's sometimes where your friendship has to be limited. You look at somebody and say, we can't hang out anymore because you're doing this, and I'm not going to do that. As long as it's going to keep on happening, I'm not going to be there. Now, what do you do about marriage? I know that's a little bit more sticky. Some of you are like, oh, those were all softballs, easies. What about marriage? It's a little bit harder in marriage, doesn't it? Now, with the wise person, sometimes there are consequences that you can both agree on, right? You know, I've been told my phone's a problem, right? So we said, can we agree that the phone's not at the dinner table? Okay. Yeah, it's a consequence for what I've done, right? It's a consequence for what we have, and a wise person will listen to the consequence. They'll even agree and say, yeah, that's a good idea. We shouldn't do that. But here are some things that, you know, sometimes come up. I'm not going to cover for you anymore and make up excuses. You know, if you're drunk and that's why you weren't there, I'm not going to tell everybody that you were tired or had a long day at work. I'll just simply say he chose alcohol over the family tonight. I'm not going to make up any excuses. I'm not going to cover for you. I'm not going to do that anymore. You're free to drink alcohol and cause destruction in our family. I can't force you not to do that. You're an adult. But I can't tell you I'm not going to cover for you anymore. That's my decision. That's what I'm going to do from now on. I'm not going to pay for this. You have a spending problem. I don't want my credit attached to your credit anymore. And so you can have your credit card, I'll have mine. You can have your bank account, I'll have mine. We just have to separate this out because I need to limit my exposure to this, and clearly this is an issue, so it's an issue. There's not going to be any alcohol anymore in my house. If I see it, I'm going to pour it down the drain or smash the bottle. That's it. You know, if the alcohol is an issue or whatever it may be. I've had adults who have had to kick their grown children out of the house. You know, they're like 22 years old, they're on difficult times, but they're bringing weed into the house, and they say, no, sorry, it's a drug-free house. If I see it, you know, it leaves, and so do you. And you can sleep in your car if you want. It's not sleeping here. That's my decision. You're free to do what you want to do, but I'm also free to do what I'm going to do. Protections for the children. This is a true story. Had somebody whose spouse was drunk picking up their kids from ball practice more than once. What do you do? What do you do? She came and told them, I'm going to tell the coaches and the school that you're not allowed to pick them up anymore. And if you want to play parental rights, we can go that route. That's not going to be a pretty route. We'll get Department of, you know, Children's Services involved, all that good stuff. You're not going to win that one. It's not going to get really, it's going to get really ugly. Or you can just accept that you're not allowed to pick them up anymore. That means when I can't pick them up, we hire a sitter who is going to have to pick them up for us and be there at the house until I can get home. And that's just that was the consequence they worked out instead of having to go down, you know, a more legalistic path. It was a consequence of the action. You know, you either accept it or you don't. You're free to continue to drink, but you're not picking up my kids when you do. Monitoring software on the computers. You know, we're going to have that. Sometimes you even have to go to separate rooms or staying in separate places. Sometimes that has to happen. Sometimes that's a consequence of behaviors and actions. You know, the goal of each of these, by the way, if you noticed, is not punitive. It's redemptive, right? The goal is always redemptive, not punitive. I'm not trying to punish you for your actions, but I'm helping you try to put together consequences and actions. Because fantasy land is where there's no consequences for actions. Fools don't understand the connection between actions and consequences. And so we're all bearing the consequence of this. We're not going to bear it anymore. And we're not going to participate anymore. We're not going to be a part of it anymore. And so if you don't want to live in reality, we are. And reality is going to smack you in the face, or Pastor Micah is. I'm not sure which, but one of those two will happen. Love you, Micah. Because it says, the wise who walks with wise gets a benefit, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. And if we join you in this foolishness, we all will suffer harm. So keep in mind, you may be really wise at work, but you may be a fool at home. King David was a poster boy of this in the Bible. Phenomenal king. Best king Israel ever had. Horrible husband, horrible dad. very foolish when it came to those areas. Made a lot of foolish decisions in those areas. You may be a great parent, mom or dad, but a really bad spouse, a really foolish spouse, making a lot of foolish, destructive decisions as a spouse. That can happen. Just because you're wise in one area doesn't mean you're not foolish in some other area. All of us have an area that we're foolish. Now, if you dare, you can ask somebody, where have I been foolish? Where have I been foolish? You know, and then what you do is you take that and you go get some other opinions and sources on that and say, okay, is this really an area? Is this really an issue? Read up on it. Does this really apply to me? Talk to a pastor, talk to a counselor and say, this is what's been told to me. You know, where are my issues here? Where am I glaring on this? And really seek it out. Because first we need to deal with the toxicity in our own life and the toxicity we're causing before we go look at the speck of toxicity in somebody else's eye. Last thing I'm going to say is this, is, you know, God loves fools. Jesus died on the cross for fools. A lot of us spiritually are trying to foolishly work our way out of our problems. You know, God points out an issue of sin, and so we think we're just going to get better. We're going to earn our way back into God's graces. And God says, no, living in reality is where you recognize I'm a sinner. I need forgiveness. I understand that Jesus Christ died on the cross for fools like me to pay for all the foolish decisions I've made. The first step of wisdom is realizing you need help. The first step of wisdom is realizing you can't do this on your own. You need the grace that Jesus Christ has offered. We join you to close out in prayer this morning. Father, the wise thing in this moment is to be thinking of ourselves this entire morning. But in messages like this, it is so easy to think of somebody else. To think about the toxic foolishness that we've put up with or dealt with or been exposed to at different points in our life, whether it be through friends or parents or spouses or kids or whoever it might be. But Father, right now, I know that your Spirit can convict me and me alone in this moment. So may I yield myself over to your Spirit right now, that you might reveal to me my own foolishness. That might seek to live in the light and live in reality. Whether it be with my husband or wife, with my kids, at work, groups, teams, friends, whatever it might be. Father, help me to see where I've rationalized or minimized or blame shifted or arrogantly pushed through. Bring people into my life who can speak truth and help me apply your word to my life. Most importantly, Father, for where I've been foolish before you, may I come before you now and just simply say, Lord, I have failed. I have fallen short. I'm a sinner in need of grace. Will you please forgive me, not because I deserve it or because I've earned it, but simply because Jesus Christ died on the cross to pay for my sins. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.